Welcome to the December podcast for Neurosurgical Focus. I'm Natalie Pynchon. The December 2015 issue is on the topic of defining, measuring, and predicting quality in neurosurgery. In this podcast, we hear a conversation between topic editors Dr. Tony Usher and Dr. Matt McGirt, both affiliated with Carolina Neurosurgery and Spine Associates, Charlotte, North Carolina. They discuss Dr. McGirt and colleagues' article, The Present and Future of Quality Measures and Public Reporting in Neurosurgery.
My name is Tony Usher. I'm a neurosurgeon in Charlotte, North Carolina. I have a number of roles in organized neurosurgery, but one of them is director of the National Neurosurgery Quality and Outcomes Database. I've also been involved with Matt McGirt, who is also participating in this session as the co-editor of a focus issue that is looking at quality in neurosurgical practice. And Matt, if you could perhaps introduce yourself, then we'll get going.
Thank you, Tony. I'm Matt McGirt. I'm a practicing neurosurgeon in North Carolina as well. I have been involved with the AANS and the National Registry, N2QOD, as its vice director, along with Tony, since its inception in 2009-2010. Serve on a number of quality improvement and value committees throughout neurosurgery and spine organizations, and am a co-author, along with Tony, on the current study and paper that we'll be discussing today. Thank you, Tony.
Thank you, Matt. So just as a very brief introduction, this issue relates to quality in neurosurgery, specifically methods to objectively measure quality, to express quality to various stakeholders in language that they can understand, and frankly, language that is relevant to their particular positions in the healthcare chain. And then also some examples of how we are moving the needle with respect to neurosurgery quality in a variety of different contexts. The particular paper and study that we are going to be talking about today relates to the first efforts to develop neurosurgery-specific quality measures. Now, it may seem surprising to some individuals that we don't yet have neurosurgery-specific quality measures. What I mean by that is that in the public domain, in an area where measures have been vetted by a variety of different stakeholders, particularly CMS and other groups, there have not been, to date, measures that are specific for our practice. What our group and a variety of other collaborators sought to do recently, and by that I mean within the last 18 months, is look at our relative practice. We recognize that the majority of what neurosurgeons do is spine surgery, and then ask a simple question: is there a way that we could develop a group of measures that would allow us to express quality in a very specific way related to neurosurgery practice? That led to the result that we are going to be discussing today, the development of 21 specific quality measures that have been approved by CMS for use in a program known as QCDR. Matt, what I'm going to do is just ask you to perhaps explain the QCDR a little bit, its relevance to programs such as PQRS, and in why this is such a very important first effort for neurosurgery as we look at our overall presence in the quality market.
Well, thank you, Tony. Yeah, the QCDR, or the Qualified Clinical Data Registry Program, is really timely and important. As you have just mentioned, Tony, stakeholders, for a number of reasons, particularly CMS and the government, but even private payers, are wanting to measure objectively the quality of care. And the first attempts to do that, very sort of, we'll call them low-level generic measures that are retrievable by codes and claims billing, were the first stab at that. What neurosurgery in particular has discovered is that a lot of these measures really don't relate to neurosurgery, to brain surgery, to spine surgery, have very little relevance into the quality of care. And the processes and methods in which to collect these data really are not feasible and quite a challenge for practicing neurosurgeons to do it. So the evolution of the PQRS program into the QCDR, I believe, is partially due to the fact that, like organized neurosurgery, other stakeholders are realizing that meaningful quality measurement has to be feasible and doable for the practitioner. And what we're measuring has to be valid or relevant to quality in that specific paradigm. So the QCDR is a step in that direction that allows subspecialty organizations or societies who, by definition, are experts in that subject matter to define what quality measures are meaningful and relevant and valid in those diseases for neurosurgery, cranial, and spine pathologies, and then a methodology that makes sense for practicing neurosurgeons that's feasible to do without drastic costs or practice realignment. So that's sort of a broad overview of why the QCDR may be relevant and an introduction into how organized neurosurgery through its national registry program saw an opportunity to begin to develop for the first time measures that are meaningful and relevant to neurosurgery in a collectible process that is feasible for practicing neurosurgeons.
Man, thanks for that perspective. I'm going to come back to the operational aspects of this in a minute and perhaps also have you comment on what you mean by making these things accessible and practical for individuals. But if we could perhaps back up and address this issue, which is a number of individuals over time have looked at the existing PQRS measures and been very concerned that the majority of these approved measures basically relate to processes, healthcare processes. Most of the measures that we have approved relate to actual patient outcomes. Could you comment a little bit on this difference between process and actually looking at the outcomes of care and the relative importance of those two sets of measures?
Well, certainly. In quality metrics, there are three general categories. There are structural quality measures. For example, does your ICU have open, lighted access or windows? Does your program have fellowship-trained physicians or surgeons? What is the volume on average? That is a structural measure. These are very basic, crude, many of which have not been validated as meaning anything and are oftentimes not immediately effectable or changeable. Then in the middle ground is process measures. Did you give antibiotics 30 to 60 minutes before skin incision? Did you recommend against bed rest for back pain? Did you use DBD prophylaxis, either chemical or mechanical? These are measures of process. And these are thought to be proxies of what we're really measuring. What is your thromboembolism or DVT rate? That is a true outcome measure, which is the third category. Whether you took mechanical or chemical prophylaxis is a process measure that's meant to serve as a proxy to was there a DVT, which is an adverse event or outcome. Process measure example number two, was antibiotics given 30 to 60 minutes prior to incision and was it the appropriate antibiotic? That is a proxy to a meaningful, true patient-centered outcome, which would be, was there a surgical site infection? So in the first years of quality data reporting and analysis and profiling, the easiest measures to get through business transactions in healthcare were codes and claims through hospitals. That was easier to measure and process. Was sub-Q heparin given? Did ANSEF, was it given before surgery? And so what we're now understanding is a patient or is a physician group or is a hospital who has an infection rate five times the norm, should they be deemed higher quality just because they are giving antibiotics at a more appropriate frequent rate or not? I think as the quality paradigm has evolved to become more accurate and valid, we're learning that quality care is not folks who have bad outcomes but good processes. It needs to be truly standards of care that actually are resulting in good patient-centered outcomes. So this effort in neurosurgery and many others are trying to move the needle away from sole process and sole structural measures into the direction of true outcome of care measures.
That's fantastic, Matt, and I appreciate that explanation. There are two other things that I think that individuals listening in on this would like to know before we close. One is you were talking about the practical issues related to data collection. Obviously, what we're talking about are processes that really exist a bit outside of what most people would think of as traditional medical care. There has been understandably some pushback from a variety of physicians and physicians groups. We understand that these are going to be important programs going forward. In fact, they're going to be required programs. But can you just address the broader idea of QCDR as a quality program embedded within a registry and maybe talk about how quality efforts can be embedded in the context of daily care, perhaps as one method for reducing the burden on practitioners?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tony. There is no question that in this new era of healthcare reform and value-based reform, practitioners in all fields, particularly high-cost fields like neurosurgery, are now facing unprecedented pressures, quite frankly, necessity to participate in measuring quality and outcome. Now, this is not a process that's embedded in our workflow. Implementing 10-question ODI as a standard of care has not traditionally been a standard 3-month or 12-month clinic visit processes. Certainly, things like patient satisfaction and other questionnaires are evolving to become standard of care at many places. And I think that we're right in the transition. So I think that obviously if you are a center, practice group, a neurosurgeon who does not collect some outcomes in a reproducible and standardized fashion, implementing or participating in a QCDR or a national registry might be a little bit more burdensome because one would need to introduce some new processes to their standard of care workflow. But when practice groups or physicians, just through their standard of care, can implement certain safety or outcome measures into how they check a patient in at their front desk, what gets entered into their EMR, their standard clinic note, you know, these are very small changes in one practice pattern that can pay tremendous dividends down the line. And these basic workflow changes, one standard clinic template at 4 weeks is to address any perioperative complications. That if one's standard workflow template clinic template is to assess a 5-question quality of life measure, EQ5D, and a return to work question at 3 months or 12 months in their clinic notes or through their EMR, then it becomes seamless. And then practicing neurosurgeons can essentially plug in, like traditional process measures, to QCDRs, like into QOD, with almost no additional cost or work burden, and then empower both their practice and their specialty in this value-based reform period.
Perhaps as a last question, and expand upon those last statements, if we're looking at the future of programs such as neurosurgery's first QCDR, the use of this information specifically, maybe we can just drill down on a couple take-home points for individuals. You and I, for example, have talked about something as focused and as practical as a calculator to advise patients regarding their specific adjusted chances of achieving various outcomes or the risk associated with surgery, to perhaps the far end, which would be using the information to inform new paradigms of reimbursement, you know, what we're talking about in terms of value and providing objective value being paid for that. So just, again, in a summary way, could you just discuss where you see us in maybe 1 and 5 years with respect to this information we're gathering?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I see 3 large buckets that are going to happen with or without our consent or without our leadership or direction. The first of which is public profiling. This is inevitably growing in the present and in the future. And somebody's process and measurement schemes of your outcomes will be made public. We're seeing this more and more from the CMS data files. It will only grow. And so we each have a very large interest in making sure that's accurate and valid. And so this is an opportunity through our surgical specialty to get it right, the right measures, measured the right way, so that when your practice, your individual practice, your group's practice, your hospital's practice is profiled in your local or national public arena, we feel that it is fair and it is accurate. That would be number one. That will happen. This is our opportunity to get it right before the storm. The second is value-based payment modifiers. We know that pure fee-for-service will change. It's probably not sustainable. And there will be, at least through CMS, and they've stated this clearly, and it is by healthcare law, that by the next 3 years, there will be value payment modifiers through government payments. And it will be based on outcome, whether safety or effectiveness of care. And again, this is our opportunity to develop a valid and accurate measurement scheme to get it right. So those are the first two that are obviously important to everybody. And the third is, Dr. Asher, you mentioned to a minute ago, the opportunity to personalize care. And this is something that is a tremendous opportunity to understand variation in outcome. By collecting data points and measuring the wide variation on complications or lack of improvement versus those who have tremendous health gains from the very same procedures, we can for the first time begin to understand personalized predictive characteristics that can help us guide where risk lies and where it doesn't. That can help you engage in your first bundled payment or your stratified or your capitated payment models as you enter into these new payment models. Again, data on risk and outliers is the key to understanding your risk, whether it's a loan or with a hospital system, in all of the new payment models. And at the heart of that lies population-based or practice-based outcome measurement. So between public profiling, value-based modifiers, which are guaranteed to happen and grow over the next few years, all the way down to novel payment and personalized indications for surgery, these clinical data registries lie at the heart of all of them.
That's really a fantastic summary, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk today. Perhaps what I could do is just very briefly summarize what we've been talking about today and also the relevance of this particular paper that we're profiling. In summary, neurosurgeons have a unique opportunity to lead in this emerging value-based care paradigm, which is really revolutionizing medicine, and it probably represents the largest reorganization of healthcare services in modern history, if not the entire history of American medicine. The QCDR represents a specific method for us to make quality improvement relevant to neurosurgical practice, because through the QCDR, we can more readily develop specially specific measures, and those will help us not only perform quality improvement more meaningfully, but also participate in value-based care that relates directly to the way we are reimbursed and incented for care. But this will be incentives related to the true value of care as opposed to volume of care, which has really characterized medicine over the last several decades. So, Matt, thanks so much for your time. Thanks for your dedication to these efforts. It's a real pleasure to work with you on these, and we look forward to moving this forward.
Thank you so much, Tony.
This concludes our podcast for the December issue of Neurosurgical Focus. Please join us for the January issue, when the topic will be Dynamic Stabilization of the Spine. Thank you for listening. The Journal of Neurosurgery mobile app is available in iTunes and the Google Play Store. Just search for JNSPG to download the app for your mobile device today.